ام كانت من النسيا كن الناس لك يا شكشو لمن تمينا تسمعي شي قول بينا ما شي تيتامينا نودستم ستابي تمينا بوتري سوايم روباك ناميام راتي سوابرن تكم Vande ham sigurose yutapada kamalam sigurum vaishnavam shasirupam sagrajatam sahaganaragunatam vitamtam sajivam sadvaitam savadutam parijana saitam krishna chaitanya devam Sri Radha Krishna padam sahagana lalita sivisakam vidamscha Hey Krishna karuna sindho dina bandho jagatpate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Visavana Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanchakalpatrubhyaccha Kripasindubhyevaccha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaisnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You will continue today with the success to come. And of course, those who are really part of the Kirtan Academy program, they chanted yesterday 64 rounds, which... So our success to come is in a way aimed to create a nice approach towards the Holy Name. And that's specifically our purpose this week. So we're coming to the fifth verse. So the first verses of the success to come are in a way preliminary. They are all dealing with prerequisites or with in the first verse Chetudarpanam, the purification of the heart through the Sankirtan movement. In the second we are strengthening our faith by appreciating the glories of the Holy Name. Because the more we appreciate the power and the potency of the Holy Name, and that all power is present in the name of the Lord, because the name is non-different from the Lord, then we chant with great faith. So the second mantra is especially strengthening our faith. In the third mantra, we are developing an attitude of humility, of tolerance, and at the same time of offering respects to all others, not just the devotees, but all living beings. Also, those who are not chanting Hare Krishna are still also dealt with respectfully. All others, every living being. And then in the fourth verse, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is basically pointing out that the material world, he has no real interest in any material desire. He just wants devotional service, birth after birth. And in the fifth verse, which we'll chant now, we will continue that meditation of making a proper of situating ourselves properly at the feet of the Lord in the process of devotional service. So please chant with me. Ai nanda tunuja kinkaram patitamam visame bhavam budu kripaya tava pada pangaja sitadure sadisam vichintaya nayanam garatas. Oh, and that's the next one already. It's just on automatic pilot, because it's been drilled into my consciousness, these verses. And I Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram. Nanda Tanuja is the son of Nanda, And kinkar means to be the servant. So, the servant of the son of Nanda. It's important to understand Krishna as the son of Nanda. Not just Krishna, but Nanda Tanuja, Nanda Nandan, the son of Nanda Maharaj. Because Krishna is never alone. Krishna is always in intimate relationships with his devotees. He's always served by loving devotees. That is one of the special features of Krishna, mentioned as one of his outstanding qualities. We are praying in this verse to be accepted at Krishna's lotus feet as just a dust particle. First, humility, tenadapi sunichena, may be more directed towards the material plane, towards being humble in this world. But now, the humility is extended even to the point that even on the platform of the Swarup, we're not going to desire anything great, we're going to desire the minimum, to be a dust particle on the lotus feet of the Lord. It is said that Lord Brahma meditated for 16,000 years on the dust at the lotus feet of the Lord, trying to understand the love of the residents of Vrindavan. And still he couldn't understand. So Lord Brahma placed himself below that dust, even by meditating on the dust. But in this particular series of verses, desiring to be a dust particle on the lotus feet of the Lord is again also being humble in our spiritual aspirations. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he said that I will never aspire for anything higher than dasya. All that I aspire for is to be a servant. Dasya ras. That's all I aspire for. But if the Vaishnavas desire to engage me in any higher activity, then what can I do? Otherwise, on my own, just dasya ras. So, although it is Srila Raghunath Das Goswami is identified as being in Madhurya Ras, still he is aspiring only for Dasya Ras. So that's the same spirit. The spirit of taking the lowest position as Krishna's servant, and even on the eternal platform, not jumping ahead for Gopi Bhav or this or that. And so that element of humility is now extended even to the Swarup. Nanda Tanuja Kinkar. But Nanda Tanuja Kinkar is very much serving Krishna in his eternal pastimes, because Krishna is eternally with Nanda Maharaj. So it is serving Krishna in not just anywhere, it is serving Krishna in his Vrindavan pastimes. And why the Vrindavan pastimes? Because when Uddhava was sent by Krishna, it appears that Krishna was giving it great importance to send the gopis a messenger. In the book Uddhava Sandesh, it is described that Krishna went, while living in Mathura, he was on the roof of his palace looking at Vrindavan, and he was thinking that he wanted to send a messenger to Vrindavan, and he was thinking who would be qualified, and he just couldn't think of anyone. And then suddenly he thought of Uddhava, and he said, all this time Subhangi really needs a chair, Subhangi, should you, is that side okay? Otherwise we've got to find a chair from somewhere else. In the back there? Subhanti, is that all right? Or others, otherwise, Revati, sit in the back on the bench. Yeah, I know that you also need, but know what to do.
We have four more benches coming today, and it will be lower.
Yeah. But Revati, otherwise on the bank, in the bench, yeah? It's too high, yeah? What to do? Yeah, sorry for the inconvenience. What to do? So, Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram, Uddhava was sent by Krishna, and Krishna was very carefully selecting a messenger, Uddhava, because he looked like him, so that would give a special reassurance to the residents of Vrindavan. Because he was a disciple of Brihaspati, because he was very learned. And the third reason was because Uddhava was a very close friend of Krishna. They had a very intimate relationship, and virtually speaking, he was the greatest devotee in Mathura and Dwarka pastimes, the greatest of all. So therefore he sent the best. He sent the best person as a messenger, the very best. So in a way, Uddhava felt the enormous responsibility. And Krishna also told him, previously I've sent messengers, but they all somehow or other did not know how to speak. They did not know how to actually pacify the residents of Vrindavan. So then Uddhava was sent. So Uddhava felt, you know, like without being proud, he really felt like, my God, I'm here on a very important mission and a lot of responsibility. It's a big service that Krishna is asking from me here. And Uddhava understood, you know, like now I'm going to need all the knowledge I have. Now everything will rest on all the qualifications I have. And then when he met Nanda Maharaj, he began to preach to Nanda Maharaj that actually there was no need to have feelings of separation from Krishna, because Krishna is the Supreme Lord and he is all-pervading. He's present everywhere. So where is the question of being in separation? And Nanda Maharaj looked at him and he thought, he's just a boy. He doesn't know what he's talking. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I mean, he's just a boy. He's all, Krishna's everywhere. I mean, we don't have to feel separation. I mean, he's just waffling away like a boy who doesn't know what he's talking about. So in this way, Nanda Maharaj had another level of realization. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there is a similar point coming up. At one point, Gopakumar, we remember, is traveling throughout the universe, going to higher and higher regions on the way to Golok. And Gopakumar is... where was I? Uddhava. Yes, thank you. Yes, yes, that helps. That was it. Yes, he came on Siddhaloka, and Siddhaloka is a place where all residents are great tapasvis, they're all brahmacharis, and their worshipable leader is Sanat Kumar, one of the four Kumaras, and who is a Shakti Avesh avatar, and therefore comes from Vaikuntha to that abode, right, from time to time. So they're all worshipping him. And it said when Gopakumar came there, he saw that all the residents of that abode were just informed in austerities. They were performing austerities, and their main thing was meditation. So Gopu Kumar expressed a desire to see the Lord. And they said, why do you want to see the Lord? Just meditate. That fulfills everything. Why do you want to see? Seeing is only happening in the mind, really. The eye is registering and then sending a signal to the mind. So the real essence of seeing is happening in the mind. Just meditate and everything is fulfilled. No need to see. Just sit here and meditate. That was their point. And then Gopu Kumar was not satisfied. Gopu Kumar said, no. Yes, I want to meditate on the Lord, but I also want to see the Lord. So that is the spirit of the residents of Vrindavan. Therefore, this answer that Uddhava gave was the same point. Just think of the Lord, meditate of the Lord, and you are with the Lord because He's ever present. All you have to do is remember the Lord. So no. But Nanda Maharaj was not satisfied because Nanda Maharaj wanted to see Him. Nanda Maharaj wanted to touch Him. Nanda Maharaj wanted to smell His head and all those things. Right? He wanted to engage all His senses in perceiving Krishna. And He didn't want to miss out on any of those things. Not on the seeing experience, the smelling experience, the hearing experience, or whatever. He wanted full satisfaction of all the senses and not just the mind. And in that way, Uddhava didn't understand, although philosophically understood, that Krishna is all present, but that has nothing to do with it. Devananda Maharaj said, this boy, he's just waffling like a child because he doesn't understand the essence of things. He doesn't understand actually that the essence is rasa, that the essence is relationship. Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram, that is what we want, a relationship with Krishna, of serving Him, and we want to see. It said a devotee will never want anything in exchange for devotional service other than service. But a devotee wants one thing. A devotee doesn't want a reward for his service other than service. But a devotee does want one thing. A devotee is hoping for a glimmer of recognition in Krishna's eyes. You know, just when the devotee is cooked for Krishna, that, you know, one day maybe Krishna will taste. Just like all these ladies make lunch packages for the cowherd boys every day. And you think these mothers don't know that the cowherd boys steal each other's lunch packages? They know very well. In fact, they're hoping that the lunch packet of their son will be stolen and that then, somehow or other, Krishna will grab that lunch packet, open it up and say, ooh, look at that, and take one prep, and whoa, and take a bite. And therefore, every day, they're not making lunch packets for their sons. They're making a lunch packet in case Krishna will steal. And therefore, an ecstatic lunch packet. Every day. The most amazing preps are in these lunch packets. So that spirit is there to fully satisfy Krishna and then to see how Krishna is relishing. How Krishna is actually relishing. That is the desire. And that is the desire of Nanda Maharaj. And therefore, Uddhava did not understand. And Uddhava could see these residents of Vrindavan, they are amazing. Yeah. See, that's why there's boys needed for herding the cows, because it takes a little bit of running sometimes. You have to be quick. They want to join the other cows, see? And they belong to another clan. They're not allowed to join the other cows. That's all they wanted. Well, maybe they do belong.
They wanted to come to here.
Yeah. Yes, Samati thinks everyone wants to come to here. I don't think they want to come. I think they were running away when they heard me.
I've seen the monkeys. They sat there listening. They
were thinking of how to steal bananas.
No one has bananas here. They stayed there.
I
have. Some hid behind and listened. And some sat there and listened.
Mm-hmm. I'm not showing you my bananas. Kadamba Banana Swami. Everybody knows. It's one of my nicknames. I like bananas. Anyway, so back to Uddhava. So Uddhava could not understand how the residents of Vrindavan were so deeply absorbed in loving Krishna. Because through learning of scripture, one cannot understand. Tarka Patista Sutya Vibina Nasava Rishi Munir Nabinam Dharmasya Tattva Nitam Guhayam Mahajani Yenigata Sapanta. Dharmasya Tattva Nitam Guhayam means the actual secret of the scriptures remains hidden in the heart of the devotees. You cannot find it by studying the scriptures, because there are so many scholars, and this one will argue in that way, another one will argue in another way, but ultimately Dharmasya Tattva Nitam Guhayam, it's hidden in the hearts of the devotees. And thus one must follow in the footsteps of the great devotees. And therefore, now the footsteps, following in the footsteps of the great devotees, it is said we want the dust of the feet of the devotees. Bina maha pada rajo bishekam. Without the dust from the feet of the devotees, you can't go anywhere. And where is the dust of the feet of the devotees? In two places. One is on their feet, and the other one is in their footsteps. That's where the dust of the devotees can be found. So by touching the feet of the devotees, we can get the dust, but also by following in their footsteps. And one devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, I always want to sit at your feet. And Prabhupada said, that will be difficult because my feet are always moving. Yeah. So to take the dust of the feet of a Vaishnava, sometimes that opportunity is there. But that is not all the time. That is only sometimes. But to follow in the footsteps, that we can do, sato vritti. So that Uddhava wanted. He wanted the dust of the feet of the residents of Vrindavan, and therefore he prayed, let me become a blade of grass, so that this secret, that their secret becomes revealed to me. Vaishnavira kriya vikyana bujaya. One cannot understand the position of the superior Vaishnava. One cannot understand what is on the mind of a superior Vaishnava, how a superior Vaishnava thinks and why. We may judge a superior Vaishnava from our own perspective. But we cannot not understand. Although a devotee may display all emotions like an ordinary person, anger, anxiety, and so many qualities. But all these qualities are always connected with Krishna. And therefore, he's never an ordinary person, even although seemingly displaying ordinary emotions like everyone else. So this Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram, and then Stita Duli, and it's Duli means dust. Vraj Duli, dust from Vrindavan. Stita Duli, to be a fixed piece of dust at the feet of the Lord. That is the desire of the devotee. Yes, to just somehow or other remain there. Meaning to say, remaining engaged in service, no matter what, that our service to Krishna will not be interrupted. And that's the idea, ahaitiki, apatiyata, unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service. In the morning you fight stage, we do interrupt service, do a little service, oh, gosh, that was so much surrender. Now I can have at least a dose of sense gratification. Now it's allowed. You know, I've surrendered so much. And each time we interrupt our service. Yeah, I say, so much surrender. I said, no, I surrendered for 10 minutes. Straight. 10. You know, not one, not three, no. 10 whole minutes. Straight. Now I can have half an hour of either sense enjoyment or a mode of ignorance, you know. Like that, we are interrupting our service constantly. Little service, some hankering, lamenting, some... But it's uninterrupted. Avyakta kalatvam, not a moment wasted in the advanced stages of devotional service. So we can also chant the next verse. Nayanam, so start together. Nayanam galadasuradariya vadanam gadgadarudiya gira pulakir nichitam vapukada tavana nagrani bhavishyati. And now I'm going to read the official translation, but it will take me a moment. And I'll just be quiet because I can't multitask. Oh gosh. Until 16. Okay, let's do it further. 16B. Just a moment. One more. Dajan. Ainanda. And now the next. Kripa Kori. Come on. So, now in the next three verses, we get the advanced stage of devotional service, the topmost stage. Nayanam, the eyes, galat asudaraya, by streams of tears running down, vadanam, mouth, gadgada, faltering, rudiya, choked up, gira, with words, pulakai, with erection of the hairs due to transcendental happiness, Nichitam, covered, Vapu, the body, Kada, when, Tava, your, Na, Namagrahane, enchanting the name, Bhavishyati, will be. My dear Lord, when will my eyes be beautified by filling with tears that constantly glide down as I chant your holy name? When will my voice falter and all the hairs on my body stand erect in transcendental happiness as I chant your holy name? So, here we see a description of ecstatic symptoms, but the description begins with a question, and the question is when? When will this happen to me in the future? So therefore we're looking at a prayer from a platform where these symptoms are not there, but where they are desired. So this is the stage of eagerness, tatalulyam apimulyam ekalam. It is said that there must be lulyam, eagerness, eagerness to advance. Of course, the eagerness is not just for the hair standing on end, but it is eagerness for service. Oh, I am eager that tears stream from my eyes, but I don't want to do any service. Oh, I'm so eager that the hairs of my body stand on end, but don't ask me to chant 16 rounds every day without fail. I'm so eager to have an ecstatic experience because, after all, a kind of would be interesting. So curiosity. Out of curiosity, we wouldn't mind a few ecstatic symptoms. But that won't do. Because the essence is not that. It's not that we want ecstatic symptoms to taste the ecstasy, but that we want simply, we want Krishna. We want that we have eagerness to serve Krishna. And then naturally, serving Krishna is not, yes, I'm serving Krishna. Yeah, I'm a very intimate servant of Krishna. Yeah, since a long time. Yeah. No, that's not to be a servant of Krishna in full knowledge of Krishna, appreciating who Krishna is, and therefore in ecstasy, naturally. So the two go hand in hand. Not totally dull, you know. Prabhupada used to sometimes say to some of his disciples that they were dull. And dull because no... how is it possible not to be overwhelmed? Not to be overwhelmed when we are serving Krishna. I mean, Krishna is amazing. But when we are dull, we are serving Krishna, and we're not conscious, we're not thinking of Krishna. We're just an automatic pilot. My example is Govindam Adipurusham. What will be for breakfast today? Yeah. That sort of sums up the our bhakti, you know. We're not there. Yeah, we're just not present, and everything is just going on out of duty or automatic pilot, not conscious. And in that way, of course, no ecstasy at all. Then devotional service is just, yeah, it's a duty. It's a burden, actually. You have to do all these things. Instead of being in the mood of gratitude, of gratefulness that Krishna is so kind, that he's allowed me to do all these things. That is more nayanam gadadasruya. Then the ecstatic symptoms come when we are full of appreciation. Appreciation of Krishna's mercy. Krishna is so merciful, so amazingly merciful that he came in my life. Although I was so undeserving, and that I got all these amazing opportunities, that he sent me devotees, and a devotee like Srila Prabhupada, that he sent me all these devotees in my life. Although I was not deserving. That kind of spirit is to appreciate Krishna's mercy and everything about Krishna. Krishna's appearance is not external. In this world, the appearance is external. Putana's appearance was external. She appeared like very beautiful, stunningly beautiful, a goddess. I mean, too beautiful to be of this world. That day, all the men of Vrindavan had gone to Mathura to pay the tax, the annual tax. Therefore, there were only ladies and old men present. But it is said when the old men were seeing Putin, and their eyes almost popped out of their sockets. And they were dumb. They couldn't say anything. They lost all intelligence. And the ladies, they thought, oh, she must be a goddess. And naturally, she's attracted to Krishna. And then when she showed motherly affection, and, oh, you know, oh. And, yeah, just like they also felt. They thought, yes, naturally, all the ladies in the heavenly planets also. So, but when it comes to Krishna's beauty, it is never like the beauty of Putana, which is a facade. Krishna's beauty is not external in any way. Krishna's beauty, see, for the living being in the material world, the body is an external covering. The soul and the body are two separate things. But Krishna is not separated from his very being. Therefore, his very appearing is his appearance is his very self. And therefore, the beauty of Krishna is not skin deep. But the beauty of Krishna is reflecting his entire being. Therefore, his noble nature is also reflected in that incredible beauty. Because Krishna is not only beautiful externally, but also beautiful internally. So in this way, we can think of Krishna's his beauty, and again, see within that also his amazing personality, and how deep that beauty is. Not just for the eye, but that it is actually reflecting his entire being. So in this way, one can appreciate the stories about Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, deeper and deeper and deeper. Actually, I'll tell you one of my own early experiences in Krishna consciousness. I had joined in Vrindavan, but then I had to leave India after some time, went back to Europe, where I'm from. And in the course, but in India I picked up jaundice. So as a result, I was very ill. So I decided to temporarily stay out of the temple because I was too ill. And I thought, in the temple, you know, I mean, who will take care of me there? Better I just go home for a little while and be sick. You know, I was extremely ill with jaundice. So anyway, then in the course of being ill, it took a while, and then after a while, an old bad habit came back. I was smoking again. Anyway, so I went back to the temple and I smoked my very last cigarette on the doorstep. I opened the door. I rang on the doorbell, actually, it was a doorbell, and I asked if I could move in the temple while blowing a cloud of smoke into the temple. And they said, come in, right? Come in. So then the devotee who asked me to come in, he said, just sit down here and read that magazine. Right? And gave me a Back to Godhead. I said, I've already read it. He said, no problem, a devotee can read it again and again. And that's exactly what happened to me, because I sat there reading, you know. Then after about half an hour, he came past and I sort of went like, I'm here, and he made a gesture from, just sit and read, right? And I sat there from 9 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon, reading the same Back to Godhead magazine. And I tell you, I got a lot of realizations that day from just reading. Now, I don't know if you've ever done, you chanted 64 rounds yesterday, but did you ever read one Back to Godhead magazine for the whole day, again and again? I can recommend it as a process. Because if you do, you will find, each time as you read it again, you'll find things that you didn't read before. And each time as you read, you'll go deeper and deeper into this magazine. And suddenly you realize the pastimes of Krishna are unlimited. They're unlimited. You can read them again and again, and you just go deeper and deeper and deeper. And there's just more and more and more. So I got a bit of an experience, a preview, you know, of that concept, how you can, how again and again we turn to the same pastimes of Krishna, but in greater depth. So now, Nayanam Gadarasura Darya, now with torrents of tears flowing from the eyes, now that mood is described, but a desire to get there, to go beyond shallow devotional service, very shallow. Yeah, it's okay, you know. I don't like this service, I like that service, I don't like this prasad, I like that prasad, I don't like this temple, I like that temple. Yeah, so many, you know. No, it's all, that's all shallow, yeah? Because everything is wonderful. And you see that sometimes in Srila Prabhupada, like, different devotees, they have stories to tell about Prabhupada's favorite, right? But Prabhupada seemed to have favorites at different times, you know. Sometimes one preparation was his favorite prep, another was his favorite prep, because wherever there was bhakti, there was Prabhupada's favorite, right? What service is the most important service? And the devotees thought Prabhupada will say book distribution. But Prabhupada didn't say that, right? Pure devotional service, right? I mean, all devotional service, it's equally transcendental. About Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada said that these books, he said they are like sugar dole, you know, like you get these sugar things on a fair that I make. They spin the sugar and it becomes like threads, and Prabhupada called it sugar dal. Right? He said, wherever you taste it, it's sweet. Yeah. So like that, wherever you taste it, it's sweet. But in our neophyte state, we take things cheaply, take things externally because of dullness, because of conditioning, because we're so preoccupied, just like, yeah, if you've just had a huge loss or something, or a great fight, an incredible fight, then you can't see anything, you can't perceive anything, you're just thinking about what you just went through. So in this way, we're just carrying with us our material conditioning, and as a result, we cannot actually appreciate where we are. I'm serving the Supreme Lord. I'm in the association of His great devotees. Krita Punya Punja, the coward boy said, we cannot imagine our good fortune, what we have done in previous lives, what benefit from what kind of activities, what pious activities must we have performed that we are now here. So the coward boys are so appreciative, and we are like, well, God, ooh, you know, even here in the Dham, we are in the Dham, and we're like, oh, my poor, oh. You know, and you name it, you know, mosquitoes, hot, this, that, you know, it's like no supermarkets, I mean, like Mayapur, and it's like internet so slow, like, you know, so many reasons why Mayapur is like so austere. Oh gosh. Whereas Prabhupada was sitting in his room. And Prabhupada, one thing he said, when slamming doors would break his heart, he said, this noise of slamming doors. So on one occasion here, after the Gorpanim festival, the month of Vaishak is beginning. And during that month of Vaishak, The temperature is also changing from cold, it starts to get hot. And the result is that you get a lot of turbulence of air, and as a result you get storms. And these storms are known as Kalvaishakis. And these are incredible storms. I mean storms when things start flying, when people practically get blown away. Right? I mean, when street lights just... We used to have these old street lights here in the park. Subangi remembers they were much nicer, but they were like a cement base and a wooden top, and you know, nice lantern type of thing, you know, but made of wood on top. I've seen them flying. I've seen them being ripped off by the wind and just like flying. So, and then it rains. I've seen it rain horizontally in Mayapur, not down, but literally horizontal. So, what shall we say? And Prabhupada was, so all the windows and all the doors were open, and then the storm started. So devotees were running left and right to close windows. Then someone said, oh my God, Prabhupada is sitting in his room. And when they came into Prabhupada's room, the wind with full force, the full storm, was blowing to Prabhupada's room. And he was sitting in his room with his eyes big and round and saying, these Vaikuntha breezes in Mayapur are so nice. What a spirit. What an amazing spirit. Such deep appreciation. We can cultivate that. It's not only that we can try and cultivate some more appreciation, no? Just like with each other, you know? It helps when you exercise a little appreciation, no? Subhangi Mataji was saying something the other day. What was it about glorifying, devotees glorifying? I forgot now what you said now. Yeah, anyway, whatever you say, I mean, you know, goes in here and gone. But the principle I remember, glorification of the devotees, and the importance of that. But glorification of the devotees begins with genuinely appreciating something, right? I mean, you don't just start glorifying devotees. And it's also not glorification of the devotees if you just start, here I have a list, you know, of Vaishnav qualities, the 26 qualities, and then I go around and I said, you know, you're so poetic. Oh, that was the first one. So the first person I gave the first one, second one, you know. And I just like stick a quality on someone without it having any roots, right? It has to show. A person has to be poetic, you know, to say you're poetic. So you have to recognize a quality in someone before you can glorify, really glorify. Otherwise it's not glorification. So glorification means we must recognize real qualities in devotees. And then, yes, then we describe them and recognize, and then we see these qualities recognized in scripture. So like that, we are gradually, genuinely appreciating. So it helps to try and appreciate people, to look for something nice in them. That helps. In the same way, it helps to try and appreciate Mayapur. The mind is an obstinate entity, and it's like described as a sapatni, or a co-wife. But that's maybe, or you could say a child, you know, a spoiled child. The mind is like a spoiled child. And I don't want it. I want ice cream. No. And then so, yes. You will get your ice cream a little later. Yeah. We say so many things to the mind to keep the mind sweet. Yes, yes, mind, I understand. I don't have it now, but later. I want it now, and I have to wait a little, but you know, we're making arrangements. Like a spoiled child, that's what we're living with, constantly. And constantly we have to pacify this spoiled child, keep it sweet. That's the mind. Yeah. So we can this time really like keep that spoiled child under control. It's like, now it's enough, okay? I'm sick and tired of you, enough, I tell you. You're going to be quiet, okay? You got it? Yeah. And don't you dare, all right? Sit down and shut up, all right? Got it? Yes, Swamiji. And then, maybe then we can start to appreciate and see some of the good qualities. So that element is there. So these verses are not, we're now going into the advanced verses, and we can of course just take them as descriptions of the incredibly advanced Vaishnavas who are way beyond us, you know, and then we go like, well, this is just too high, you know. It's not too high, it's for everyone. We can all appreciate, right? Yeah, it's like, you know, like, I remember in Mayapur, Jnanivas gave one lecture and asked, like, what color are the eyes of Krishna? Sort of like, you know, what color are the eyes of Krishna, you know what I mean? Huh? What color? Yeah, you know, and you might say different things. Some might say, well, brown, or, you know, like this or that. And Gyanasamudra says black, right? But then Janani says, yes, they are black like bumblebees, right? And you look at Radha Madhava, you go look at Madhava tomorrow. And you can see their eyes are like black bumblebees, they really are. After Janani was said that black bumblebees, I had a look. And Madhava really have eyes like black bumblebees, you see. And they're described, the eyes of Krishna are like restless like black bumblebees. Like that. Huh? So that's gradually we can appreciate. You could chant 64 rounds just because you want to for some reason, and by force chant 16 rounds. But that's not the same as just chanting out of appreciation. If we first read a little bit about Krishna and his black bumblebee's eyes, then maybe we feel more inspired to chant. A little bit, then we awaken a little appreciation for Krishna and then chant. So in this way, even those of us who are not like there on that advanced platform, we can still allow ourselves a bit more appreciation of Krishna than we just generally have. Because generally, I described it the other day, that we are so busy, you know, since we became involved in this movement, we're just so busy, we have no more time, so it becomes so external, you get so caught up in so many things. The weeks have 3 days, it seems, there's never time, always tired, always pushing, and the time flies by. Where's the time to appreciate? But take some time. That's one quality I like so much about Prabhupada, that he was the acharya of the whole movement, and he was single-handedly pushing the whole movement, right? At one point his movement had spread all over the world, and he was traveling from place to place, and meanwhile he had his big projects in India that he was trying to develop that had so many complications that no one could deal with but him. And he was doing all these things, and still he had this air of relaxedness about him. Very relaxed. I like that interview with this black American interviewer. And Prabhupada is sort of sitting there in front of millions of viewers. Very kind of leaning back, you know, as if he's at home, you know, like with some friends. Not like I'm on TV now, the whole world's watching. And totally relaxed, very relaxed. So I have to learn. I'm not so relaxed. I'd like to be more relaxed. It seems nice. It seems natural. It seems a consequence of being deeply Krishna conscious, of deeply appreciating that we are with Krishna. And what can be wrong? There's nothing wrong. You know? Vaikuntha, no anxiety. Krishna's here. Nothing is wrong. Everything, Krishna's here. And of course, for Krishna so much to do, but we're not facing this alone. Of course, sometimes I think about these things, but then to live up to it in a practical situation, sometimes I get overwhelmed. The other day, I had to make this call, and it was important, and then the damn phone stopped working, and I almost broke the phone. Computers flying out of windows. Anxiety. Someone's anxiety. But if you have faith, Krishna's there. Krishna will help, somehow or other. We'll try our level best, but in the end, the result depends on Krishna. Everything goes by Krishna's plan, and the outcome, therefore, will be all right, because it will be Krishna's plan. That kind of deep Krishna consciousness, that we should strive for. So may I ask for some reactions from your side, some questions, some comments? Gyan Samudra Prabhu.
He had some he was consoled by following in the footsteps of Nanda Maharaj. But what was Nanda Maharaj? How was he coping with the separation of Krishna?
How was Nanda Maharaj coping with the separation of Krishna? It was a deplorable state. That's all we can say. I mean, really, Yasoda was saying, how could you let Akrura take him away to Mathura? How could you? She couldn't get over it. And she kept on bringing it up. And Nanda Maharaj just said, "You mad woman, you know, Krishna just went to the forest. He'll be back this evening." So it's like they were both like in a state of, they couldn't think of anything else, not for a moment. Of course, you know, now comes the complexity of of separation. The complexity of separation is that with separation from Krishna comes remembrance of Krishna. And remembrance of Krishna in itself is so ecstatic that one moment they're completely overwhelmed in separation, and the next moment they're overwhelmed by ecstasy from the remembrance. So it's not just remembering Krishna, but it's not the same as how it was when he was here. No. It's remembering Krishna is full of ecstasy. Therefore they were thrown, you know, between emotions of feeling separation one moment and feeling ecstasy the next. And therefore it's said that mood of separation is sometimes compared to hot sugar cane. Too hot to handle, too sweet to resist. So that was kind of Nanda Maharaj's experience. But you know, all I can do is quote a few things like that, otherwise what can I understand about these feelings? I'm way behind Uddhava. You know, miles and miles and miles, lifetimes. And if Uddhava prayed to be a blade of grass, you know, what will we pray for? I don't know. Who else?
With this verse, I Nanda Tanuja. It's another aspect that the devotee wants to be a particle of dust, not at the feet of God with awe and reverence, but at the feet of the little boy of Nanda Maharaj, the small powered boy. It's not slightly different feeling there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No reverence.
Oh yeah. No reverence. In that Vrindavan setting. Yeah, close and intimate. Mm-hmm. Not distanced by awe and reverence, by formality, even forgetting that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All these kind of things. Yeah. Of course, we hear these things many times in our movement, you know what I mean, about the quality of Vraja Bhakti. It's a topic which nowadays is discussed a lot. In Prabhupada's time, maybe less.
The early days, it was a lot.
Maybe, okay.
You listen to the lectures of 69, 70, in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada is introducing the five different rasas. In the intro, not even the
18th
chapter, it's right in the intro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe true. Nectar of Devotion was one of the first books published.
Mm-hmm. Krishna book.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's very much there. But first deserve, then desire. That I must say.
Indra used to use that quote, and he used to add to it that you deserve when there's no room for any other desires in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So when you reach a point where there is no other desires,
yeah,
then you deserve.
Yes, anya vilasita sunyam. True. And then we can deserve, but still depends on Krishna's mercy. Right? But then, then every day I stand there in front of the mirror, brush my teeth, shave, and do whatever you do in front of mirrors. and my face has slowly grown wrinkled, and the skin is sagging, and like, you know, memory is not what it used to be, and so on. And who is Anya Abhilas Sunyam? Yeah? Who is free from any other desire? And then he say, like, are we gonna make that to be completely free from all other desires, or is it anyway at least no faith in other desires? Huh? And coming to a point where we say, if there is any other desire, let them die. Let them just die. I'm not gonna invest in them and just get absorbed in service to Krishna, and then, you know, at the end of life, kind of praying, it wasn't much what I've done, but still, somehow or other, still I'm hoping to get some mercy. I think for most of us, that's going to be probably where we'll wind up.
But at the same time, we can't change that goal.
We can't change the goal.
If you're planning, if the pass mark for an exam is 50%, you still aim for 100, because aiming for 50 might leave you at 25.
Sure, yeah. No, that's right. We must always try for perfection. But the mercy element is important, you know, and I feel you will always see these two elements in the preaching, you know, like one is preaching about, like Ayendra, you quoted him, like very much putting in his book the emphasis on the highest qualification. And then, yeah, then next to it you have the causeless mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who just, you know,
causeless.
Who just gives, right? Who just gives it, and just somehow or other, and, you know, I stand in front of the Panchatattva, you know, I mean, if
you
go like,
you put your bet on the
causeless. I put my bet, what can I do? It's like I'm with the Panchatattva. I'll visit, I'll come to Radha Madhava, I mean, I'll pray, right, but longer at Panchatattva side, because I know, you know, where I belong, I need the mercy. Yes. Okay, when you think, I need the mercy, that is a qualification. Yeah, but you have to, at the same time, also do something, right? You have to give up certain sinful activities. You have to try and overcome offensiveness in nature. So to make quite an endeavor. And then, so when we are making the maximum endeavor in both in the gross adjustment, remember in the Gundicha Marjana, in the cleansing of the Gundicha temple, Lord Chaitanya wanted to clean the temple and arranged that all the devotees were getting brooms and they were sweeping. And when they swept the temple, they swept it twice. Lord Chaitanya was personally going around and checking how much dust everyone had collected, and although he was checking, at the same time he was sweeping, and he collected more dust than anybody else, than all the others together. Right? And if someone didn't do very much, then Lord Chaitanya would chastise him. Right? So this dust, the first sweeping represents the gross sinful activities and bad habits that have to be given up. All those things be swept out. The second cleansing is representing the subtle interior contamination in the mentality, all the qualities that we have. So the first one is the activities, the things we do, we have to adjust, and the second is We have to adjust our mood and mentality, and when that is done, then we are kind of getting ready as candidates for the mercy. But that much is required from our side. Just desiring the mercy, oh Lord Chaitanya, please give me the mercy, but I'm not going to do anything for it. We may get some mercy, but in that way, maybe not so much. Lord Chaitanya also wants to see an endeavor, even although he's most magnanimous. Otherwise, it's just accept the Lord in your heart, brother. Accept him in your heart and then you grow wings.
Change the mood and mentality.
The mood of what?
Mood and mentality.
How do we change our mood and mentality? In two ways. One is through knowledge, and the other one is, maybe three ways even. The mercy of the Vaishnavas, associating with exalted devotees. It's said by associating with saintly personalities, with great devotees, you can save yourself thousands and thousands of births. And in these thousands of births, we'd have to go through a gradual evolution of consciousness. We are recognizing the principle of evolution, right, in Krishna consciousness, but not a physical evolution from lower species to higher species. But we are recognizing the evolution of consciousness over many, many births. So in other words, that it's a whole process of many births to develop. And one can shortcut that with thousands and thousands of births by the association with the devotee. And then there's just the general anartapasamam saksat bhakti yoga madokshade. Just by engaging in devotional service, our mentality will automatically change. So without making conscious endeavor, it will change automatically. Just by doing devotional service, we change quite a bit. And that faith must be there, therefore we must always be engaged in devotional service.
Hard to reach perfection to the point where Krishna will notice how perfect you are, but at the same time he is the savior of the most fallen. So then where do you get the motivation to get anywhere? Oh well, just be the most fallen. That's easy. That's easy to do.
Well, but Prabhupada said you're not the most of anything to the devotee who said he was the most fallen. So maybe it's not so easy to be the most fallen either. Because we are afraid also. In the end, most of us are mediocre. In the end, we just wind up being mediocre. We're sort of there, we don't make like a major endeavor. We just stop at 16 rounds and never do much more. We don't make much of an endeavor. Well, that's why these kind of efforts, like a collective, a kirtan academy is a good idea. I mean, I thought about it because Sachinandan Maharaj is my friend. Somehow or other, when I took sannyas, he was one of the first sannyasis I met. And then he goes, and he said, "Oh, Vairagi Bhai," yeah? Brother in renunciation, right? And I took that really like, wow, that's nice. I get some recognition now, like as a brotherly. So since then we've been really good friends. Since he said that, I gave him my enviousness, whatever. So he sucks me into these things, Then he has a kirtan course, and then I have to also come.
right, and do it. So last summer I was teaching a kirtan course in Radhadesh, and in the summer, you know, when there are so many other things I could do, and I'm thinking, what am I doing here, sitting in the summer with a handful of devotees, sitting in a castle, when I could be out there preaching to so many people? Am I really doing the right thing? So I had some doubts, you know. But then I could also appreciate, after I thought about it, how important it is to collectively make an attempt to put some quality into our efforts, because you know, you did it like yesterday, your 64 round thing. To do that alone is much more austere, much more austere. But when there's a whole structure around it, okay, then you somehow or other go and do it. Right? Whereas alone, you find a thousand reasons why you can't do it. So that kind of so it's nice, and the Dham should be for that purpose. That we come and that we spend some time to collectively get absorbed, whether it's in kirtan or the holy name or in the Bhagavatam or whatever. Excuse me. It's all useful. So we need that. So I think we are weak, we are mediocre, but because when we have a good culture around us, that can really help. So this is like part of that culture. I mean, I feel that, you know, like in the Krishna book, there's this story about Pondraka who glued on two extra arms to look like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everybody, well, Krishna and his devotees, they were laughing and they saw the two fake arms and everything. Anyway, Pondraka was, of course, killed, and also the king of Kasi, who was a good friend of Pondraka. And then, after the king of Kasi's head has been cut off and thrown into the city, then the Sudarshan Chakra goes through Kasi, which is Benares, and destroys the city. Right? But then there's a whole description of the city. And quite a city. It says there were like 30,000 lecture platforms. I remember that. 30,000 lecture platforms. So this would be one. So Mayapur could use 30,000 lecture platforms. Right? All kinds of mandaps and places where groups of people can just sit and gather and chant and discuss and, you know. There used to be, you know, many of the huts that were there before are not here now, I think, but they had here. Okay, but they had these mandaps, these little places where people could sit and discuss, and that's what we need, and that needs to happen everywhere, endless discussions, so that the whole town is buzzing with kirtan and discussion. After this, I have to go to a master plan meeting about Mayapur. And I think, I'll just tell them we need thousands and thousands of lecture platforms and kirtan platforms. Drama, yeah, every day. The whole Ramayana, from beginning to end, right? Everything. And in Vrindavan, we used to have such a nice place because we had the Gurukul. And when they did the Ramayana, they were the best, because when they played the monkeys, that was very convincing, you know. They really did all these monkey things to each other, you know. They were like really cool monkeys. And then the next time they were dressed up like gopis, and because they were innocent and young, you know, and like actually at that age still free from sex desire, the play had such purity and innocence. It was shocking. Like, I remember a group of gopis and a group of cowherd boys, and Phew, it was like out of this world. It's difficult when you do that with adults, you know, because while they are sort of like... Even on stage, there is some lust. That's why I like the old paintings of Krishna where he's very young. In some more modern posters, Krishna sometimes looks like he's 20, like seen it all, done it all, heard it all, know it all. Those posters I don't like.
Neither did Prabhupada, actually.
Yeah.
When I was in Los Angeles and Srila Prabhupada visited the Dharma studio. I was working in the Dharma studio for a few days. So I happened to be there and he saw Krishna as Parthasarathi. And his comment was, the horses are more beautiful than Krishna. And Bharadraj said, I tried to make Krishna look a little older because he's in the battlefield, so he's a little bit older, maybe like 20 or something. So he was looking like he was 20. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, Krishna should never be older than 16.
Very good. Krishna should never be older than 16. That's that. So with that, we'll take a 16-minute break, maximum, yeah? And then we'll resume again with a little kirtan and then some more discussion. Thank you very much. And if you bring back a question from the break, it's most welcome.